Welcome back to Chasing Dramas. This is the podcast that discusses Chinese culture and history through historical Chinese dramas. We are your hosts, Karen
and Kathy.
Today, we are discussing episode 42 of the Tang Dynasty drama, The Longest Day in Chang'an. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or else email us at karenandkathy@chasingdramas.com. As always, this podcast is in English with proper nouns and certain phrases spoken in Mandarin Chinese. For today's episode, we'll start with an episode recap and then move on to history. At long last, it is Chou Zheng, or 2 a.m. The time has finally come for the grand confrontation. And today's episode is a thrilling one. Xiao Gui and his band of men easily make their way up the Flower Steeple Tower, dispatching many of the guards along the way. One of the men stays behind, knowing full well that this is a suicide mission. But he stays to set a trap of oil to deter any reinforcements. Up on the tower, Director He is allowed to leave after the emperor excuses his outbursts this evening. The emperor's behavior today will be very conflicting. We will see multiple examples of how we think he has a kind heart and is understanding, but others where this is not the case. In this specific instance, he is showing his more kind-hearted nature. The emperor could have sentenced Director He to death for insubordination, but he did not. The emperor allowed him to return home, a huge act of grace. And actually, as I'm thinking about this, how did Director He hobble home if the Pifu are like right down there? I don't know how he got home.
Yeah. Let's not think too much about that, shall we?
Well, as I said earlier, the time is now Chou Zheng, or 2 a.m., and it is time to light the Grand Tower.
There are multiple things happening right now. The mechanism within the Grand Lantern Tower has started, and the tower's different elaborate contraptions are working their magic. The civilians outside are oohing and aahing at the lanterns floating out of the main tower and the various arms that are extending, creating a magnificent sight. The crowd bursts into cheer at this sign of grandeur.
That whole tower looks impressive to me in 21st century eyes. If that was a real tower in the Tang Dynasty, I don't even know how that would have been very much recorded in history. So I actually do appreciate for this particular drama that they went all out for this tower.
Most likely some of this was half CGI, but regardless, it is an impressive sight.
But my question is it worth all that money that the emperor spent on building this?
Inside the Flower Steeple Tower, or Hua E Lou, Xiao Gui and his men make their way up the tower while Xu Hezi, winner of the parade competition, is waiting to give the golden arrow to the emperor. He is to light the lantern with that arrow. There's a lot going on here with Xu Hezi. Basically, she is there to try to seduce the emperor in order to bring about more fortune for her hometown. She is lavishly dressed and kneels in front of the emperor with that arrow. When the emperor asks her what her name is, she doesn't respond simply with her name. She instead says, "My name is very long. If the emperor wants to know my name, it'll take time." She also sneaks up to look at the emperor, something she was strictly forbidden to do by the training eunuch. Does the emperor know what she's doing? Probably. She could have just given him her name very easily, but no, she's like, "You would have to spend more time with me to know my name." That's certainly a more like a come hither kind of sentence. The other person watching tentatively as this is unfurling is Yan Yuhuan. Of course, she needs to make sure that this Xu Hezi doesn't take her attention and therefore power in the palace or the harem. Yan Yuhuan definitely does not want Xu Hezi to seduce the emperor.
Before the emperor can take the arrow to shoot it at the lantern, a scream breaks out from within. Maids scream and shout of an impending threat. In an impressive long shot, a guard is killed at the top of the stairs as Xiaogui makes his grand entrance. He stares down at the nearby diplomats and screaming maids as he takes a turn around the main hall. Xiaogui is unafraid of the Imperial Guards, who, quite honestly, are also scared to do anything right now. Xiaogui barks orders at the crowd of people in the main hall, sauntering around the room. He announces himself to the crowd, saying that his deceased brothers asked him to have a conversation with the Emperor. It's an impressive single shot as Xiaogui heads over to the crowd and orders for the Emperor to step forward. Once again, I personally am pretty impressed at the Emperor's bravery. Instead of hiding away, he resolutely announces himself as Li Silong, the man Xiaogui is looking for. And note, he says that he is Li Silong instead of Shengren. Li Silong is the more colloquial term, and Shengren is, of course, the preferred title for emperor. Let's also think about the emperor stepping up right now, and we'll compare him to another character in this particular episode.
In front of Xiaogui, the emperor queries why, after so many years, is Xiaogui seeking revenge now? After all, it has been 10 years. Xiaogui, finally seeing the emperor, is ready to confront him, but surprisingly, the emperor is able to name exactly what the 8th Squad is, where they fought, and the emperor was able to list many names of the members of the dead soldiers from the 8th Squad. The emperor knew exactly what position Xiaogui held, what position Wen Wuji held, and the position that Zhang Xiaojing held to boot. With each name the emperor recalled, Xiaogui broke down the harsh exterior and burst into tears. He asks how does the emperor know all of this, while the emperor responds, his soldiers sacrificed themselves for the empire. How could he forget? Xiaogui cries as he wonders how does the emperor know of the people who spilled blood for him. The emperor responds that not only does he know, but the world knows because they are the empire's heroes. He then shares that the general Gai Jiayun was stripped of his title and sent to watch over a farm. The emperor then goes that in private, he already made sure the 8th Squad is remembered for their valor. We will talk about this a little bit more later on, but General Gai Jiayun was basically the general who caused the 8th Squad to suffer such heavy losses. If it wasn't for General Gai, maybe most of the 8th Squad's soldiers would still be alive today. This is an extremely touching scene because Xiaogui realizes that perhaps the emperor isn't as awful as he thought. All Xiaogui wanted was for the emperor to recognize the wrongs that has happened not only to his brothers on the battlefield, but to many other similar men in the empire. The fact that the emperor knew of him and many of his fellow soldiers signals that perhaps the emperor isn't as ignorant and unknowing of the sacrifices that have happened in the country. This is a touching but significant blow to Xiaogui, who, despite his tough and ruthless exterior, really only wanted for his brothers to be recognized for their sacrifice. When the emperor says that he will excuse their actions tonight as long as Xiaogui apologizes, Xiaogui releases his weapon and kneels in front of the emperor, requesting that the emperor also care for the hundreds of thousands of Tang civilians. The emperor says, of course, they are my children too. An announcement that the time has come for the lighting ceremony, and the facade breaks.
The emperor takes the bow to shoot the arrow. Before doing so, though, he turns to the audience, Xiaogui included. The emperor proclaims that he is compared to Yao Shun, but Yao Shun are mere men. He, the emperor, is a god or a shen. This line pulls Xiaogui out of this facade. You can see Xiaogui's face harden at these words, and he goes to pick up his staff again. Why would it be this phrase that kind of hardens Xiaogui? Because the emperor, despite having said all of those nice things earlier, still believes that he is above everyone else. He believes that he is not human. He is a deity and should be revered. You can see how Seogwe's gaze shifts back to the hatred because I think right now he feels that he is justified in his actions. He cannot allow this emperor to continue since he does not believe in the common man, the emperor that is. The emperor turns around to shoot this arrow. He fires it off to the Great Lantern. Seogwe expects a massive explosion, but it doesn't happen to the extent that he was expecting. Instead, Zhang Xiaojing was able to sneak over to the specific arm and cut into the bamboo to release some of the excess oil, hoping to reduce its firepower. Yu Chang, meanwhile, I swear, she's basically like a cockroach, she just doesn't die.
Well, for now, for the next like 10 minutes.
Well, back to Yu Chang. She lost an arm in the last episode and still somehow is able to follow Zhang Xiaojing onto one of the arms of the contraption. She is rescued by him from falling to her death. They have an interesting chat while on one of the extended arms as Zhang Xiaojing says he wants to save her and Xiaogui. All they need to do is take the emperor out of Chang'an to see the poverty that has succumbed in all parts of the country. That way, the emperor can finally enact change. I believe this actually touches Yu Chang because when the emperor lights his arrow, she pushes Zhang Xiaojing out of the way and ties him to a rope so that he is not killed in the explosion. Meanwhile, it is assumed that she sacrificed herself to ensure that the explosion does happen.
I feel like there was some kind of editing issue because I couldn't tell if Yu Chang actually died in that explosion or some of the flashbacks of what she was doing in the main tower were just flashbacks or if she managed to run to the main tower and then let things explode there.
Unfortunately for Yu Chang, given the actions of Zhang Xiaojing, the Great Lantern does blow up, but in a more contained way. There were unfortunate casualties, but nowhere near the scope of what Xiaogui expected. The reality is, Xiaogui expected all of them to be blown up, not just the tower itself. I'm also going to pause here. How is it that we got like a longer extended flashback with Yu Chang compared to Wen Zhan a couple episodes ago?
But now, because the massive explosion did not happen, another confrontation is underway. Xiaogui and his men of Pifu are against the emperor and his men. Xu Hezi takes this opportunity to protect the emperor and is actually shot via arrow by one of Xiaogui's men. It's not a life-threatening injury, just kind of on her shoulder, more of a warning. That was definitely her way of getting attention from the emperor so that he remembers her sacrifice in the future. On the sidelines, Yan Yuhuan also wants to step in to sacrifice herself for the emperor, but Tan Ti, whom we haven't really seen in a while, stops her. She has a better idea for how to rescue the emperor. In front of the emperor, Xiaogui states that all of his men are here because of him. The reality is that everyone is just an ordinary citizen. The underlying subtext is that they were forced into such retaliation, as Xiaogui says, because the emperor favors the villainous right chancellor. Xiaogui's men attack, and chaos and bloodshed ensue. While all of this is happening, Zhang Xiaojing, who landed on the roof of the Flower Steeple Tower, makes his way to the main hall to see the fight breaking out. While the emperor makes a valiant effort and actually joins the fight, he is subdued by Xiaogui. I am impressed because the emperor had more fight in him as a 60-year-old man than his son, the Prince of Yong. General Chen Xuanli finally makes his way up with his men as reinforcements, but they have no choice but to drop their weapons in the face of an emperor who is being held hostage by Xiaogui. Zhang Xiaojing joins the fray and takes Tan Qi hostage as well, except she is disguised as Yan Taizhen. How she managed to change that fast makes no sense, but whatever. I also still am a little skeptical as to why Xiaogui believed in Zhang Xiaoqing, because the explosion didn't happen and the only person who prevented that explosion is Zhang Xiaoqing.
Xiaogui over here is about to kill the emperor, but Zhang Xiaoqing calls him back. He says that they should use them to get out of Chang'an and pay their respects to the graves of their fallen brethren. Before leaving, though, Xiaogui orders Zhang Xiaoqing to kill the Prince of Yong as revenge for Wen Wuji and Wen Ran. The Prince of Yong can only scream and cry for his father as Zhang Xiaoqing menacingly heads over to him and attacks. Before making the blow, he makes direct eye contact with the now injured Xu Hezi, who is much braver than perhaps people expect. She is not scared whatsoever at what's going on and does not blink at Zhang Xiaoqing's attack on the Prince of Yong. Perhaps she, at this point, is the only one who believes that he is still that hero. It's also very telling that we don't see Zhang Xiaoqing actually stab the Prince of Yong, just hear him cry out. The emperor is now being escorted by Xiaogui, while refusing to give the other half of the military command seal to General Chen Xuanli. The emperor's reasoning is that this seal gives too much military power to whoever commands it. If he gave it to Chen Xuanli, then the general will essentially be able to wield all of the military might of the Tang Empire. He will not give it. However, as he's being dragged out, he does not forget to bark orders to Chen Xuanli and the rest of the court to kneel.
This, to me, is the second example this episode that while the emperor shows bravery in front of impending death and some other actually quite good qualities, he still values his imperial power above all else. He is being dragged away, a major humiliation, and yet he still refuses to trust his general of 40 years to give him the other half of the command seal or Bingfu to rescue the emperor. That is how, throughout this episode, while we see moments of how this emperor could be a benevolent ruler, the underlying interior is perhaps too corrupted by imperial power to actually salvage. I think that's what we're seeing right now, is that we see hints of greatness of who this Li Longji emperor could have been or was when he was 25, but that's already been corrupted too much by what it means to be emperor. This episode closes with the real Yan Yuhuan crying out for the emperor. She is held back by General Guo, who says that if one day comes when she must sacrifice herself for the emperor, she should remember what happened today. We know from history that is exactly what happens several years later. She sacrifices herself for the emperor. As to what happened to the right chancellor when all of this was happening, he sprinted away from danger and hid himself in a secluded room to try to protect himself. Contrast that to other members of court that at least stood in between the emperor and Xiaogui when Xiaogui first appeared. That shows, once again, how cowardly this right chancellor is.
All right, well, that was the episode recap. And today's episode was honestly a thrilling episode. Not only did we get so much action happening, there was a lot of underlying subtext that is almost blink and you miss it from a harem politics perspective. I, though, was blown away by Zhou Yuwei's acting as Xiaogui. How his facial features changed during his exchange with the emperor was such a treat and really blows many other actors out of the water.
Who also teared up during his exchange with the emperor? I know I did. I basically feel like every time I watch this episode, I'm like, oh my god, Zhou Yuwei, aka Xiaogui, you're such a good actor.
What's interesting is when the drama first came out and it was him in the first couple of episodes, people called him oily because of his icky-ish interactions with Yu Chang. But I think this episode really redeemed him. I also do want to spend a moment on Yu Chang. I've mentioned before that in the drama, she is more fleshed out as someone who received kindness from Xiaogui and is willing to sacrifice everything to help him achieve his dreams.
In the book, she is more of someone who just repays her debt and doesn't have too many emotional attachments to Xiaogui. This is another example of a theme this episode made more apparent. Ordinary people can make an extraordinary impact. The members of Piu Fu who caused so much havoc today were just ordinary people. Xiaogui is also an ordinary person. Zhang Xiaojing is also a plain civilian. They don't have backgrounds, they don't have connections, but they were able to make such an impact. And this is something that I think is very different, or a key theme that the director and screenwriters tried to hammer home, as this part of the drama in terms of who drove Xiaogui along was changed dramatically from the book. This is a conflict that will come up over the remaining episodes of how is it possible that an ordinary person can do all of this, or is it even possible? Does there have to be some kind of higher power moving behind the scenes or working behind the scenes to make such a big impact?
We also say goodbye to the character of Yu Chang in this episode. I'll give kudos to the actress Li Yuan for doing such a great job in her whole Assassin's Creed getup for 40 plus episodes. but we've seen Li Yuan in other dramas, and let's just say that she is very much able to swap between very feminine characters and a much more androgynous character, as we see here in The Longest Day of Chang'an.
Now let's move on to some history. In the fiery confrontation between the Emperor and Xiaogui, the Emperor tells him that he's never forgotten about the 8th Squad, and that the Emperor dismissed Gai Jiayun as punishment for his crimes in battle. He even states that Gai Jiayun will not be recorded in history. So let's rewind to the historical facts and finally talk about Gai Jiayun, who we have avoided for the past 40 plus episodes. The Old and New Book of Tang do not have records of him, so it is unknown the years of his birth or death. He first appears in history during the middle of the Kai Yuan era of Tang Xuanzong's reign, which is in between 713 and 741. He was already a pretty high-ranking member of the military of the Beijing Protectorate and established the Han Hai Jun to protect the area of what is now modern-day Xinjiang, Hubaozi, close to Urumqi.
We do have recorded that during the first lunar month of 736, which is right after the harrowing events of the A Squad in the drama, Gai Jiayun successfully pushes back the Turkish Khanate, which were the enemies that the 8th Squad was fighting. In the subsequent years between 736 and 739, Gai Jiayun led several successful campaigns against the Turkish Khanate in the west, including capturing Kutchur, who briefly served as the Turkish Khagan. In 740, Gai Jiayun returned to Chang'an victorious with many prisoners of war, including Kutchur. Gai Jiayun was then promoted to be the governor of both the Hexi and Longyou regions with a force of almost 150,000 strong to keep an eye on the Tibetan Empire, or Turufan. Unfortunately, Gai Jiayun, arrogant from his accomplishments, turned to wine and women and refused to head to his post to the northwest. When the emperor got wind of this, he pushed Gai Jiayun to leave. Gai Jiayun only grudgingly did so, and to continue currying favor, wrote several musical poems and pieces for the emperor, which were very well received. While at his post, though, Gai Jiayun neglected his official duties, and this all came to a head in 741, when the Tibetan Empire, with an army of 400,000 strong, marched to the Anxi Protectorate. Due to his mishandling of the situation, Gai Jiayun lost the strategic outpost of Shibaochang, or Stone Castle City. Upon hearing this news, the emperor was outraged at Gai Jiayun and stripped him of his duties. Gai Jiayun then disappeared from history. Shibaochang, or Stone Castle City, was only reclaimed by the Tang in 749. As Karen said earlier, the Old and New Book of Tang do not have a chapter on him, which does show that he didn't have too much influence or was purposefully omitted. There was a blurb about him in the Old Book of Tang in another person's chapter. And Tencen, our poor scholar in the drama, did write a poem about him, but again, there's not much to discuss about Gai Jiayun. All in all, we just know that he was a capable general for a time, but then floundered that away. For drama purposes, they paint Gai Jiayun as this calculating, cold-hearted general that left these 200 men to die. There's no history to confirm or deny this. And as for the emperor dismissing Gai Jiayun for the 8th squad, again, that is just for drama purposes. Gai Jiayun was dismissed, but that was because of his own doing. Moving on, in the drama, Xiao Gui was basically persuaded by the emperor for all of his words of, I will take care of people in the empire, and I do remember members of the 8th squad. Until the emperor proclaimed himself to be better than Yao Shui. The emperor said that they were only human, but he was a god. Emperor Yao and Emperor Shun were legendary emperors in Chinese folklore, two of the three sovereigns and five emperors. They were listed as members of the five emperors in Shiji, or Records of the Grand Historian, which was written in the late 2nd century and early 1st century BC. According to legend, and some places' records to be around 2300 BCE, Emperor Yao was a tribal leader who ruled from the age of 20. During his reign, the Great Flood began and was disastrous for his tribe. He spent 9 years trying to reduce the flood, but to no avail. With guidance from his advisors, the Four Mountains, he abdicated his throne to his son-in-law, Shun. Yao set forth many tests for Shun for the latter to prove his worth. Shun took over the throne and proceeded to handle the flood. Honestly, these legends always got me really confused. Back to the drama though, our emperor Tang Xuanzong is so very pompous that he believes he is above these legendary emperors. He believes his accomplishments surpass all of those before him and that he is no longer just a mere mortal. That is exactly the attitude that dooms the empire. We'll see if he does any self-reflection in the last few episodes, but all I can say is I understand why Xiao Gui, who was so close to abandoning his mission and even feeling bad about the fact that he was about to blow up the emperor, solidified his resolve when he heard the words of, "I am a god." And that closes out our rather long episode discussion of episode 42 for The Longest Day in Chang'an. The music for this episode is Qing Pingyue, played by Karen, with sheet music by Cui Jianghui. As a reminder, if you're looking for sites to watch dramas and you're in the US, head over to our sponsor, Jubao TV. We also did a recent review of the Tencent version of Three Body that can be found on Peacock. And let us know your thoughts on the drama. Once again, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you in the next podcast episode.